Everyone agrees, bacon makes everything better. Even marketing. This is the Bacon Podcast, where you'll learn to cure your marketing.
And make your business sizzle.
Can't believe I said that.
Internet marketing. Online marketing. Social media tips and techniques. Now, to help you bring more bacon home, the master of marketing sizzle, Brian Basilico. This is the Bacon Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Brian Basilico, and this is the podcast where you learn to make your business sizzle online. So are you ready to fry up some new business?
Hey, peeps. I hope you enjoyed episode 235 with David Garfinkel. If you haven't, go back and listen to it. But this is part two, and there's some more great stuff to learn. So sit back, relax, and get ready to learn something.
So, David, you've done a really great job of defining the difference between advertising, which I consider to be more branding, and we saw this at the Super Bowl commercials. I mean, Anheuser-Busch did an immigrant coming into the country, whether it was planned before all the stuff happened and just was timing and they capitalized on it or whatever, or whether it was used to make a point, I don't know. But that is something that was polarizing, no question about it. Doesn't make me want to drink a Bud, no, because I don't like the taste of the beer.
And you're very generous to call it beer, too.
Yeah, thank you. It's something. But anyways, and then you're talking about, I see the direct response thing that you talked about as well. I mean, that 1-2% is kind of an industry average. I've been in marketing for 35 years. And, mm-hmm. If you send out sales flyers, you send out postcards, you do just about anything, even Google ads, 1-2 response rate is, or percent response rate is, pretty average. It's pretty good. You get a 4 or 5, you're jumping off the cliffs, screaming at the mountains. Direct response, and I love that too, because you're asking for a call to action. I think that's mm-hmm. something incredibly important. Give me just kind of a broad brush overview of what, when you're writing direct response copy, what are some of the key components that need to be in there, other than you said, sitting over somebody's shoulder and having a conversation? Is there any kind of formula involved in writing great direct response copy?
Sure. Let me give you an important perspective, and then I'll give you the simplest formula you've ever heard for direct response copy, which a friend of mine came up with. But I'll give you his name. I won't take credit for it, and then we can maybe break it down a little bit into more detail.
Cool.
First of all, most traditional advertising, branding advertising, is really about the company and their product. Okay. Direct response advertising, I would say, is really about your prospect, their problems, hopes, fears, dreams, and as a supporting character in this little drama, how your product or service can help them through the obstacles or over the brick wall that's keeping them from getting to those dreams. Major difference, right? Okay, it's really about the prospect. So, if it's really about the prospect, what does the prospect need to see or hear or read in order to take that action that you're making the call to action? Well, what your prospect needs is some kind of promise, mm-hmm. a promise that you or your company can help them with a problem or a goal, and I see them as two sides of the same coin. A goal that you haven't reached yet is a problem because you haven't reached it yet. So it's a problem to be solved still. Okay? So they need a promise that tells them they're going to get somewhere they wanted to get, they haven't been able to get, they've been frustrated about. Maybe they've even been depressed about. Maybe they've been even desperate about it. But in any case, it's something they want they don't have. So here's the very simplest formula. This is from a friend of mine. I love this guy. His name is Ted Cooper. He wrote some of the original ads for Apple Computer and Intuit, which makes QuickBooks and Quicken, way back in the day in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s. Ted actually shared this with me at the height of the dot-com boom, right around the year 2000, when there were all of these college kids who, you know, had this money thrown at them, jobs and dot-coms that were doing nothing, and they brought Ted in to teach them advertising, and he knew it was a sham, but he tried anyway. They'd given him good money, wanted to do what they paid him to do. He said, it's very simple. Make a claim. A claim. What's a claim? A claim is a promise. What kind of promise? A promise that you're going to help solve a problem that the prospect already knows about and has on his or her mind. Make a claim, number one. Number two, prove it. Prove that your claim is true. Number three, ask for action. And number four, wait for it, leave everything else out.
Now, what do you mean by that?
You know, nobody really gives a flying hoot that your firm was founded by two brothers in the early 1900s, and nobody particularly cares that your firm won the J.D. Power Award for the most shameless self-promotion in advertising in 2016, and that kind of stuff. All the stuff people throw in there that's real important to themselves but not important to the prospect, and furthermore, all the stuff that might be of some interest to the prospect, except it doesn't have anything to do with what the prospect wants or proving that it's true. So I was working with one of my professional copywriting mentoring clients last night on the hardest thing any copywriter has to do, including this one, me, and that is to write copy for yourself. And it's not hard because we have trouble blowing our own horns. It's hard because we can't really get distance from ourselves mentally like we can from everything else. So that's obviously where I was able to give him special value as his coach. And I said that I keep all of my consultations confidential, so I'm going to keep this a little vague, but it'll still be specific enough for what we need. I said the first thing you need to do is have a really good headline that gets the attention of the people in your target market in regard to the particular problem that you can solve. So I'm going to pick a different target market, just for example. So he's not working with health and fitness coaches, okay? But if he were, his headline could say something about how health and fitness coaches do good far more often than they do well. Here's how to get paid and help even more people improve their health and their fitness. That could be a very rough, we'd need a little more time to, sure, to get better, you know, just right. But what's in that headline? Well, it does a few things. It identifies the target market. It calls them right out. So let's say that you are a locksmith or a heart surgeon or a hedge fund manager. You would know right away this is not for you. And why should you read it? You're not a health and fitness coach. It's just a waste of your time. And if you inquired for it, it could never lead to anything good, because you couldn't use the service and it'd be a waste of the people at the company's time to talk to you, right? Mm-hmm. So it targets and brackets the market. And let's look at the other side of that. Let's say you were a health and fitness coach. Let's say it was April, and once again there was too much month at the end of your money. And not only that, but on the 15th you had to pay some taxes, and you didn't have money for that either. Boy, this would really resonate, wouldn't it? This would be something you'd want to read, and it zeroes in on the problem. And another thing that's really important, what I found, and I don't know how many, I imagine you've worked with a lot of people in the healing professions, yep, health, fitness, trainers, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. These people aren't necessarily in it for the money. They need money. They may even like money, but they're in it because they really like to help other people and cure people. And you could say, well, maybe that's because of their ego or whatever, but nevertheless, that's what their main focus is. So if you acknowledge that, if you acknowledge, you know, you're doing good, but maybe not doing as well as you should. Oh, now we're starting to get a headline, a little rhyme in there, huh?
Mm-hmm.
The person's going to say, you know, well, you know what they're going to say, at least at a subliminal level when they see that?
What?
Oh, these guys understand me. These guys get why I'm in this business. And that's going to make all the difference. They say, well, if they're going to show me how I can continue to do good and I can make more money, I'd really be interested. So, and I'm spending a lot of time on the headline because it's been proven and confirmed for decades that when you're looking for a response, 80 to 90% of the effectiveness of all of your copy is going to be depending on what's in that headline, what's in the big letters over the top, the first two or three lines of wording, the title, you know. So that's very important. So then from there, you would want to have an opening line that also talks about the problem and the solution and your promise in a very clear way, maybe a way that engages the reader even more. And then, just as you correctly asked me to tell my origin story, the person who's the head of the business or the person who is the spokesperson for the business in the sales message will tell at least a little bit of his or her story. Now, they could tell the company story. Believe me, you know, companies don't have souls, they don't breathe, they don't have blood running through their veins. People like to think they do, but they don't, but people do.
Right.
And so people buy from people more than they buy from legal entities filed with the Secretary of State, known as LLCs and corporations and sole proprietorships and whatever. So you would tell a personal story, and then in the story you would want to tell about how you came up with this way of solving a problem. Next, you would want to tell about why this is important to the person reading it. Don't assume that they're going to do that thinking. Do it for them. And then tell them what you have for them, which is called your offer. Start to spell out your offer and detail it out. Maybe give illustrations, examples that can allow the person reading this to imagine the same thing could happen for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, from there, explain, you know, how the offer is delivered, what it costs, and give a preliminary call to action. Then talk about a guarantee or risk reversal or protection for the buyer. What if this doesn't work out? What if you don't like it? How can you get your money back? How can you be sure we will restore you to a level of comfort and happiness? And finally, another call to action, and probably some more testimonials, some more case studies. That's the and by the way, it wasn't all that different. I know I started out with my mentoring client last night, and I switched to a health and fitness example, but that was pretty much the structure I laid out for my client last night too.
Awesome. One of the things that I talk about a lot is people listen to two different radio stations, or businesses broadcast on a certain radio station, and people are listening to a different radio station. And the radio station that most businesses broadcast their messages on is WIIAM, but most people are tuned into WIIFM. And WIIAM is what is interesting about me, and WIIFM is what is in it for me. And, you know,
that's true. And they're two different me's, right?
Right, exactly. Right. And there's that disconnect.
That's really good.
I think a lot of people, you know, when they're writing their own copy, when they hire other copy, they get so emboldened about what's important about them that they forget about the whole thing is really about the end user and creating that connection and that emotional connection. So what are some of your best advice or tips about creating? Because I know that in copy, obviously, you hit on so many incredible points. I mean, I could talk to you probably for 5 hours, but I don't want to do that to you nor my audience. So, which means I have to have you back on. What, you know, one of the things I've learned in copy is using emotional trigger words, evoking some kind of emotion with people, as they're going through this process of reading the copy, whether it's a page on a website or a true sales letter for direct response. What's some of your best advice about invoking that emotion?
Well, I agree with you 100% about the radio stations. I've never heard it put so elegantly. I really like that.
Thank you. Feel free to use it. Go ahead.
I will, and I'll attribute it to you at least the first six times. And then
thank you.
I hope I can. It's not just the words. The words will come much more easily, and they'll make a lot more sense once you can step into your prospect's shoes, once you can go over to the other side of the table or the other side of the counter. You have to understand that what's interesting about you to your prospect, in other words, WIIAMTYP. boy, now I'm making it too complicated, aren't I?
I don't think the FCC will allow you to use that call letter. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, we'll have to keep brainstorming. Is what's interesting to them is basically there's two things that are interesting to them. And if you would like them to pay you and be happy and like you and keep buying from you, you need to be aware of this and then act accordingly. The first thing prospect wants to know is, what can you do for me? What can you do? What will buying your product, engaging your services do for me? That's the first thing. And the second thing is, what's the experience going to be like for me? What's it going to feel like? What's it going to seem like? How am I going to experience this? And so if you can start to make a list of those things before you ever start writing, then when you're writing, you will basically look at improving the situation that the prospect has now that they feel bad about to a situation that they want, that they'll feel good about, and talk about it that way. Say, you don't like it very much when you've been putting in a 12-hour day and charging what you think are reasonable rates, half your clients aren't paying you, and you're exhausted, and you're running a little short on the Visa bill. I'm talking here about the imaginary health or fitness coach. Wouldn't it be nice if you were able to work a six-hour day, deliver tremendous value to more people, get paid better, and have your clients sending you an overflowing stream of referrals? I mean, you see what I did? You can't just pull words out of there, but anyone who's in that situation is going to go, oh, yeah, that's exactly what I'd like. And that's more like what the experience will be like. And then you could say, well, you know, our system of practice improvement and enrichment will help you do all of those things and so much more. And what would you do with all of the additional time and energy you have for other projects you might want to work on, or new skills you'd like to develop, or retreats you'd like so that you can live the same balanced life you're telling your clients to live, and et cetera. And all of a sudden, you're putting out, it's like a buffet of all these different experiences and goals they have, and saying, we can help you do that, that will create a tremendous amount of emotion in your prospects.
I love that. Buffet of experience and goals. Man, that is a knowledge bomb that just went
duck for cover, shrapnel for logic bomb.
That's outstanding. So so the last question I got for you is this. You know, you brought up a lot. I love everything that you're saying, headline being the most important thing. I mean, that's why I bought your book. I read through that, and I've read through all the headlines, and I know that's incredibly important. Creating that experience, I mean, it's that, you know, you're really helping the person to visualize and to imagine themselves in that position. When it comes to the offer, the call to action, what is the most important thing at that point to convince people to click the button to buy?
It's almost like Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol. You know, you need to show them the ghost of the Christmas future. If they don't, you need to let them know. You know, you've created all this wonderful stuff in their imagination. At the pre-logical level in their mind, they think they're going to have that forever right now because it doesn't know about before or after. You know, it doesn't think logically. You need to say, or you could stay the way you are right now. You could continue to just limp along, sometimes not even providing the great care that you want to, but we'd like to make sure that never happens. So you need to paint a picture that if they don't take you up on your offer, things are going to stay the same. You know, the old definition of insanity, doing the same thing, expecting different results. And then with your offer, it needs to be very clear. It needs to be in exciting, vivid, visceral, pictorial language. And it needs to be almost at a faster level, a more staccato, vivante kind of level where you're raising your energy level. This is like the talking about the Sully movie, where you're really excited about it so that they'll get excited about it.
David, man, you have done just an incredible job of laying out all of these pieces, and I so appreciate it. I call them knowledge bombs because, I mean, there's just little, you know, people listen to these podcasts and they pick out little pieces. They go, ooh, that makes sense. Ooh, that makes sense. And you have to listen to them sometimes 3 or 4 times. So this is one I really suggest people listen to it again, and learn some of these techniques. And David, you've really delivered. You've underpromised and overdelivered from where we started. So, man, I really appreciate it. So people want to get a hold of you. What is the best way for them to do that?
Well, there's a couple ways. You could follow me or friend me on Facebook. I'm David Garfinkel, copywriting coach, or David Garfinkel. I check both accounts. Frankly, I still haven't figured out the difference between them. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I repost all my posts on both of them. I write about stuff like this, obviously not in the same depth as we've gone today. I don't have you peeking over my shoulder. But and the other thing is, if I do copy critiques, if you actually have something that's going to make a difference for your business, where there's money at stake and you're doing a launch or you're redoing a sales page for your services, go to Garfinkel Coaching, Garfinkel Coaching.com, and I have a service called Critiques and Consultation. I think it's under Critiques, but I can apply a lot of the things we've talked about today to someone's specific situation, help them improve the copy, and we can also talk about strategy and things like that. And those are really the two ways, the website and Facebook.
Awesome. Well, David, man, again, it's been a pleasure. You are somebody that I've, known from afar, and it's so great to get to know you face-to-face or voice-to-voice. And again, I really appreciate you bringing so much knowledge to this podcast. That's why I love doing it, because I get to interview some of my heroes, people that I have learned to respect. And man, it's just been a pleasure. I really hope my peeps get as much out of this as I did. So man, thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Well, that's it for today's Bacon Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something today. If you did, please go to iTunes and give us a review. We appreciate all your feedback and comments. If you have any questions, go to www.baconpodcast.com/questions, and we'll make sure we get those answered for you. Till next time, keep sizzling!